And this is what we call transnational financial repression, when your bank account can be terminated, when your financial data, travel data, communication data can be stolen and undermined or used against you, weaponized against you.
It's not just your financial data and your street address. I mean, it could be literally anything and everything about you. And so depending on how they want to attack you, they have a lot of different options.
If somebody living in the US understands that his bank account as a US citizen can be easily weaponized, he's not safe anymore.
All the requirements that exist today, all the trust of other countries that they don't do a lot of vetting, they just kind of blanket trust everyone, and so it gives access.
This is what you enjoy your privacy. And when your basic privacy is undermined, like, what actually protects you? Where is this protection?
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Wave podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Luda Kozlowska. Luda is a wealth of information. This was a fascinating episode. If you are not familiar with the amount of surveillance, the way that different nation states, tyrants, and authoritarian regimes can access your data and put your banking and access to financial services at risk, you gotta listen to this. I think this is an issue that all Bitcoiners should care about. We should be supporting her and her mission. You're going to find this interesting, I am certain. It's a little bit dark, a bit heavy, but tune in, stay focused on what we're talking about, because I think you're going to benefit, and I think you'll really enjoy this episode. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Luda here with me. So great to have you. Welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Hello, hello, everybody. I'm really glad to speak with you today.
Yeah, this is so we got to meet backstage at BTC Prague, talk for a few minutes. I think I'd seen your account on X, didn't make the connection when we met, but you're doing some amazing work, and I think very important work. Tony was with us, one of our founders, and he was very excited to meet you. He knew exactly what was going on. I want to start with one of the big problems that you talk about, and that is this notion of transnational financial repression. And I think this is probably a foreign concept, no pun intended, to many people. Why don't you explain what you mean by that, and what are some of the implications? Like, why should people be paying attention to this
so
problem?
So we first time started to speak about transnational financial repression when we experienced by ourselves. When I say we, it means myself, my family members, my team, as Open Dialogue Foundation, my company, working in Europe and many other countries. So my accountant, my lawyers, my volunteers, even cleaning lady, all of us at some point, we found out that our bank accounts were terminated in Europe, in different countries, in different European countries. First, second, that our financial data was used by different dictators to attack people who were cooperating with us. For example, they were going after our donors, our recipients of the funds, of our customers or our investors. So it was like really, really broad spectrum of people around. And just a little bit as a background for those who don't know me, I'm a human rights defender. And from other side, I was a philanthropist until they crushed me completely with this weaponization of anti-money laundering, counter-terrorism regulation or cybersecurity laws. All of these important laws created to combat criminal activities can be easily weaponized by bad guys, by dictators, or by proxies of those dictators who just want to undermine your business, your human rights activity, who just envy you. So you name it, the reason why you can be destroyed with these tools. And the reason why you can be destroyed with these tools, because there is no remedies in regulation. So it's closed from one side. So you, for example, as a customer, will try to get information from bank or any kind of fintech or any kind of exchange of crypto assets. Why your bank account, why your crypto assets exchange account was terminated? You will never get answer. And it's not because bank is bad. It's because regulation forcing them to decline you this answer, to provide you with this information. They treat you by default as a criminal that you potentially can actually use this information to protect yourself. But you should have this right, right? And from other side, you have dictators who have full control on financial system in their countries. And not only, they can reach out right now to Western civilization, like you know, European Union, US, Canada, UK, Australia, Japan, like basically everywhere. You cannot hide it because this regulation is global. And they will use their financial institutions and request, state-to-state request, to get all your financial data, all your travel data, all your, you know, communication even data, your iClouds, everything. They can get it and you will never know about it. And it could be information request. It could be exploration request. It could be suspicion of you being some kind of criminal. All of these give enormous access for one site. So you are totally exposed. You can know, you cannot even know that you are exposed so much because you believe that you believe in Western civilization, you have privacy, you enjoy your privacy. You don't. And this is what came to me extremely painful. And this is what we call transnational financial repression, when your bank account can be terminated, when your financial data, travel data, communication data can be stolen and undermined or used against you, weaponized against you. And you have no ability how to protect yourself against this kind of abuses. Living in Western civilization. So, and we need to remember that majority of the countries in the world are authoritarian. People who want to undermine our rule of law, our values, our civilization, majority in this world, right? They literally, this is reality where we are. It's not like it's pink around, right? It's really a lot of people who want to take our values, and you have no tools to protect yourself.
Yes. So what's the nature of like the AML requirements, those sorts of things that enable this sort of surveillance, lack of privacy? They say, okay, well, we want to stop money laundering. Is it, were the laws and the regulations just written in such a way as to make it broad enough to allow this? Or are they just, have they completely distorted the intent for, you know, nefarious purposes? Like, how are they able to use these laws?
It was created in the past by Financial Action Task Force, which is a body created by G7 countries. And it was created as a tool for preventive, like an emergency tool, right? That it was not expected that authoritarian regimes will be so much sophisticated that they will start to use this system back against Western civilization. So the idea was that we all live and we cooperate based on trust agreements, right? So I trust you, you trust me, US trust Belgium, US trust African countries, US trust Latin American countries, Asian countries, and they all share data between themselves because they just want to protect their citizens, right? But what if these authoritarian states in some African country, in some Asian countries, in some Latin American countries, they use information one side? For example, how is possible that sanctions are evaded? Because those authoritarian states who want to evade sanctions, they don't share all data or financial institutions they control. And it's so easy for them to hide it, right? Because you then have to question states, right? It's not bank not sending you information from this authoritarian state. It's the government of this corrupt regime, or this is, it's like a sense of corrupt regime, right? They allow this bank not to send this information to Western, let's say, police or government or services, because they will protect this bank. So, and then from one side, police, Western police will share data immediately with authoritarian states because they want to cooperate, because they trust, right? It's state requested. So we trust, we send this data. But they don't receive data and they can have no ability even to check what was not sent. So this is disproportion. So this is abuse of trust. So these regulations, they build on trust as an emergency tool. So before court happening, before a prosecutor will do investigation, before police will do investigation, these emergency tools were created to stop transactions, to share data immediately. And this is something what's extremely dangerous, because what these emergency tools did, they delegated state functions to private institutions, to bank, to fintech, right, to crypto asset service providers, even to travel agencies, to airports, to hotels, to iCloud services providers, messengers providers. Right now in Europe, we know that they want to oblige messengers providers like Signal, WhatsApp, to monitor your messengers to prevent crimes. which again will be one of the most wanted spot for all regimes to get, because they will be able to control minds of all Western civilization. What is discussion? What is the private discussion with AI? Is access to this data? You have immediately control of all population, right? Because you would be able to know who is what concerned, what they are talking about, what the most private things. And this is so dangerous. And this is why we always say about the need to protect privacy, the need to protect privacy tools like payments, communication. We started to speak about travel, data protection, because this is something what is right now one of the most wanted. Look what's happening with crypto assets holders, Bitcoiners, or any kind of cryptocurrency holders in France. Why it's happening, right? Because these data aggregated by financial institutions was weaponized against clients. And it's so easy, way easier to go after people who hold crypto assets, because everything actually can be tracked on blockchain, right? So it's a tool for all criminals or any kind of states, authoritarian states, to attack you, to know your way how to attack you and undermine your privacy, your life, people around you. It's extremely dangerous. So why we also say that this delegation for private institutions dangerous? Because banks, crypto asset services providers like exchanges, any kind of providers, actually, even iCloud providers, they have no incentives to do their proper investigation. They have no this capacity. If states have no capacity, why private institutions with limited resources, who is oriented on profit, has to do it? They will never do it, right? So for them, they want just to comply with the law. They just want not to lose their business. They just want to feed their family, live normal life. They don't care about human rights and X, Y, that. They can have no idea why one of their customers can be wanted by some regime, or why, for example, one competitor will want to undermine somebody's business to get in his travel data or communication data or financial data, right? It's just like no reason to overthink, right? Business doesn't function like this. So right. This data is going to be shared automatically just to comply with law, because law requires this. And this is the reason why we say that if we lose privacy-oriented regulation in the main Western jurisdictions like US, European Union, let's say Canada, like UK, right? These standards will be used everywhere. So there is no privacy at all, because you have no safe land where you can operate. It means that developers, they will not be safe, because whenever they create any kind of privacy tool or something, they can be a target. And there is no way you can put your mask as much as you want. If you go to the airport, you take out your mask, right? It means your travel data can be compromised. If you communicate with a messenger, which is compromised, and there is AI, which is monitoring your messengers and checking if you are comply with the law or you're potentially dangerous and sharing this data immediately, so other regimes can get into your messenger, it means your privacy under huge risk. And I'm not saying about financial data, because your financial data, it's your data for your medical services, your day-by-day services, your family member services, everything around you. It's not only business, it's everything. So if we have no understanding, no rules, like you drive and you understand that from every side you drive on the road and every time you expect crashing on you or something, you have no lights order, right? The same actually can happen with your privacy. So you will not feel safe. If you feel not safe, you don't develop, you don't invest, you don't do anything. You're actually in the mode of survival. And mode of survival, we see how it's happening in third countries. It brings nothing for society. It's extremely harmful. And this is something what we definitely don't want to happen in the US, in EU. We see huge threat in it. And I experienced myself having, I would say, the biggest protection because of effectiveness of my human rights work. Back in 2018, and my team were extremely, extremely prosecuted. So several regimes, after understanding that we able to use political tools, trade agreements, different kind of conditions on macrofinancial aid, for example, when money flowing from EU or US to third countries, we put conditions, certain names of political prisoners. as a condition. Okay, you want to trade, you release these political prisoners. Why you put these conditions? Because you give hope of people who actually fighting for these values, Western values, by the way, that they will do their homework in their countries. You don't need to send money there. You don't need to do more stuff, you know, like enforcing. These people, they on the ground, they just need support to be released and they will do everything by themselves. So you decrease aid, you promote values, you have safe neighbors, only benefits, right? But dictators were not happy about it. So what they did, they joined efforts and tried to destroy my organization, tried to destroy me physically, to stop my work. And they announced me a threat to national security in these countries. And if you see what this announcement means, it's not just like empty words. It's actually boosting certain criteria of regulation, international law. And they achieved with this accusation ability to get to my financial data in Belgium. I didn't know about it at that time. So I had protection, like physical protection in Belgium. Once I was now in threat to national security in Kazakhstan, in Moldova, in Poland. Poland was also, besides the fact that it was a European country, there was a quite corrupt regime, violating human rights, distorting businesses, like prosecuting judges, prosecutors. It just was absolutely crazy. And So what they did, they announced me threat to national security. On this basis, I was listed as a person not anymore able to enter European Union because it was politically motivated and I had connection and knowledge how to defend myself, not only people who politically persecuted in other countries, I defended also myself. I was excluded from this list. So I thought, okay, I'm safe. I'm back to Europe 3 weeks after this insane attacks. I protected my family. I'm good. I can continue my human rights work. No. Then day by day, I started to get different kind of information that people with whom I work in Kazakhstan, they were arrested. Our donors started to get different kind of strange requests. Our customers had different kind of problems. And I said, okay, but how it's possible? It's only financial institutions can have this data. Nobody knew that I sent this transaction there. Like, it's like impossible. It was, we use privacy communication like Signal tools, right? It's like, it's impossible. We never met with this person. So this person get our aid in a very secure, at that time I thought, very secure way. We never met. And with the time, I got documents that actually all my financial data was shared with those countries. And this is the reason why people were arrested, why people were tortured, why people were disappearing in those countries. So they went after not only our donors in Western countries and also in these authoritarian states where we cooperated with different civil society groups, but they went also about recipients of the funds, their family members, lawyers. Like, it's total network. They were crushing and crushing people. And of course, You wake up with the situation, you think, okay, I have all possible political tools. I think I'm protected by President of France. I have support from Prime Minister of Belgium. I have police who understand that I'm transnationally repressed. They protect my safety. I have support of parliaments, European Parliament. Like, what's going on, right? Like, if a person like me, with these kind of troubles, what we can say about others, right? So, and this is the reason why I tried to speak with different tech developers. Okay, what I can use as an alternative? What could be my tool to protect my privacy, especially financial privacy? And this is the reason why I started to use Bitcoin at that time, especially because my bank account was completely terminated. So banks after banks not only shared my data, they closed my accounts. Close accounts of not only myself, but also my family members, volunteers, accounting, lawyers. Like, nightmare. How you can operate right now in any country without bank account, especially in Western countries where you cannot pay with cash, right? It's discouraged. It's strongly discouraged. You cannot use cash anymore. You cannot pay rent. You cannot pay even your phone. You can do almost nothing. In some countries like Netherlands, you cannot even buy water. Like, you cannot buy anything. With cash, you cannot do anything. And with this situation, at that time, Bitcoin in transactions, especially peer-to-peer transactions in Europe, were not that much overregulated. So I was using local Bitcoiners. This is a way how I not only survived, but also was able to hold accountable those who were prosecuting me. So we won multiple courts with Deputy Minister of Special Services of Poland. They have to apologize. With members of the Polish parliament and government representative. They use different kind of state machine against us to punish for our human rights work, and they lost. And you would think, yeah, you lost, right? So you kind of survived, you hold these people accountable. You won, no? No, you don't. Because the law created in the way that no matter how much laws, court hearings I spent, no matter how much decision of the court I have, with this decision of the court, I cannot go to financial institution and say, restore my right. I cannot say, Google, restore my reputation, restore my financial, economic reputation, my public reputation. Just nobody cares. You spent years and years courts, and there is no way how to protect your rights. And this is not only about me as a human rights defender, who overcame every time more and more complicated, you know, it's like a computer game. Yeah, you know, you start from this wall, and then everybody's attack you, and they create more and more sophisticated ways. You're like, okay, I did everything. I did literally everything. I overcame. Have you won? No, because like, where you go with these decisions?
Yeah. That's crazy. And I think this is what's maybe important for people who are listening to hear is that, you know, for example, you struggled with this in Poland. And like we saw in 2021, oh, was it 21? The Canadian truckers protest,
yes,
in Canada.
Exactly. It's the same problem.
And so like what's happening is these issues are encroaching upon more of the people who believe it could never happen here.
Yes.
Like we're all one degree away from that happening. Now you are maybe in a sort of a different situation. You probably have more of a target on your back by virtue of what you do, your outspokenness. Could you maybe talk a little bit so people have context, anyone listening who isn't familiar with the Open Dialogue Foundation, what is it that you do? Why would they be attacking you in these sorts of circumstances?
So as I said, as a human rights group, like you have a lot of human rights organizations, right, in the world who are doing kind of similar work, but it's all about how you able to overcome this kind of attacks. So we were very effective in defense of political prisoners, the people who politically prosecuted because they were criticized the government, or they refused to pay briberies, or they refused to comply with illegal demands of corrupt regimes or some certain officials in those countries. We were supporting them. We were the voice of those people who never heard how we were doing it. So we were putting their names in the requests of politicians when they were meeting between the states, or a request of parliaments, governments, trade agreements. And it was annoying for dictators. They were forced to release because they keep political prisoners as a hostages, right? So they trade with them. If nobody remind your name to dictator, you will never be released. This is simple as it is. So it's only Western civilization who mentioning the name of specific person who is in prison can save life of this person. That's it. This is simple as it is. And this is the reason why we work a lot with politicians. And we see this in this tremendous power. Because, again, you don't need to have this insane amount of money sent into the country to change the government. If you have people who understand how they want to have their life, how they want to have rule of law, human rights, privacy, and many other things, the same values as normal people live in Western countries, you would see that it's not like a majority of Western civilization is moving to the side of authoritarian state to live in their standards. No. Actually, those who live in authoritarian states, they want to live in Western civilization. That's why everybody's tried to immigrate in the US, in EU, because it's safer, it's more understandable, right? So these values, it's something really what people care. And we were defending it effectively. And this is the reason why at certain point those three regimes understood, okay, we cannot deal with this organization by ourselves. We need to join efforts. So this is dictators who they every time making, like for example, they were trying to organize threat attacks. They did explosion in our office in Warsaw. We were found out who was standing behind it. We get protection. So this is one. They were trying to threaten me, my family members, my team members. We found a way how to fix it. Okay, they came next in level. So it's not like I'm so insane and they're going after me because they also don't have other tools. No, all these tools, it was gradually exploded and I was able to overcome it. While majority of organizations, they crushed. They just, okay, it was too much. I stop here. I was not stopping. I was with my team. We thought, okay, we overcame it. Do we continue? Do we continue our fight? And said, yeah, we overcame it. It's like, why not be example? Let's continue our work. So, and this is what brought me to the stage when regimes became way more sophisticated towards to me than others. But then they, like, when once some this sophisticated scheme uncovered, it's massively used against other people. For example, I was quite vocal saying how anti-money laundering regulation was weaponized against me. But a lot of business people, for example, in Poland, the richest people, the most successful people, they never were even touching any political life, nothing. They were just successful in their business. They were precisely crushed as I did. Their family was not able to do anything. Their wives were crying. Their lawyers were shocked. They were not even able to deal with this. So their business was completely taken by the regime in Poland at that time. And you would say, okay, so what is the difference? Like, here is a human defender who is kind of all the time getting these attacks, and there is just a business person, like most prominent billionaire of Poland, or just tech developer of cryptocurrencies or exchanges or remittances provider. So why all of them were also crushed exactly with the same model? The answer is because it was comfortable, because there is no remedies. Because nobody invented remedies how to protect you in this kind of situation. It means that this tool, once it works on somebody, it will be immediately weaponized against other category of people because it's easy and you are unaccountable in this situation. And this is the reason why once we uncover this kind of human rights violation, this is the reason why human rights work is so important, that you prevent scaling of this human rights violation. It's not like I'm doing this human rights work because I don't have anything to do in my life. No, I understand consequences. If we don't stop it here, it will be norm. It will be approved and it will be norm against everybody. We don't want to live in these norms, right? We want to live in safe environment. We don't want to have these crazy values to be with our families, children, whatever. We want to have safe and prosperous societies. And this means that this kind of bad behavior has to be stopped on the very, very ground when it first appears. And this is the reason why it's so important to educate people, to say, hey guys, okay, you have your right in your Western jurisdictions, your constituency to your senator, your constituency to your representative. You know your governor. Go and say, I want protection of my travel data, communication data, my financial data. I want to have protection of privacy developers, especially I want to be globally transacting, for example, with privacy Bitcoin tools and feel safe. I don't want my data being weaponized because somebody envied that I have beautiful house or because maybe I invented something which is wanted by China or any other their allies. I don't want to be exposed. I want to have and enjoy my privacy. And this is something what sounds very simple and would sound obvious, but it's not any more obvious at all. And this is what we try explain as much as possible from one side, normal people, audience, like your listeners, but also we do the same to regulators. And we put it as simple as possible because, you know, regulators and politicians, they also people, they also kind of disbelieve already in their powers. This is what I see quite often in their eyes. And when you show them, no, if you sign this letter, you would see this person is actually released and you would see how tremendous changes to entire society of entire country you're doing just signing this letter because it's someone's life and this life of certain leaders. If you change and you save this developer of privacy, you would give a tool for millions of people. If you save this leader of this opposition movement, you actually protect minds and human rights of millions of people in this country. And this is the same. So you protect small early warning mechanism, which actually massively protect rights of many, many people. And this is why it's so important to understand it and to protect it.
So would you say, that all makes a lot of sense, would you say that in terms of what you're pushing to do, because I could see sort of two ways of maybe going about this, like very broadly, I'm sure it's much more nuanced, but you could either say, hey, all the requirements that exist today, all the trust of other countries that it doesn't sound like they don't do a lot of vetting. They just kind of blanket trust everyone and sort of gives access. Is it that you wipe that whole paradigm of regulation and that legal framework clean and you say, we don't have AML requirements anymore? Because my understanding is that it's not particularly effective anyway. Or is it some sort of additional legislation or nuance that you add to ensure that this sort of thing doesn't happen? Like what specifically are you promoting? Like if you could wave a magic wand, what's the solution for you?
So first of all, we know that there will be a lot of course, resistance from the existing already built anti-money laundering regulation environment, right? And cybersecurity environment. But what we want to have strong argument on our side. And we always ask, okay, you guys want transparency. Be transparent. Show us data which shows effectiveness of those tools. Effectiveness from many categories, not just combating criminal activities, but also impact on economical society, impact on privacy and human rights. These two things, economical impact and privacy and human rights, were not taken into account at all. And this is one of the most crucial because both economical and human rights issue, rule of law issue, it's a national security issue. If somebody living in the U.S. understands that his bank account as a U.S. citizen can be easily weaponized, he's not safe anymore. If his travel data, communication data can be easily weaponized and he has no tools how to protect himself, it's a national security issue. And this is what people have to understand. Because anti-money laundering regulations, cybersecurity regulations, they were created to protect, to actually make secure society, to provide national security. And if they serve to undermine national security, something gets wrong, right? So, of course, my point, to make it very simple, that this trust, blunt trust to all countries has to be reviewed. And I understand how it's difficult will be to do because we have a lot of law companies who charge a crazy amount of money. We have advisors from so many governments who are actually having these companies and many, many other things. It's like entire industry exists in entire like world, which feeds in itself with AML regulation, right? But, okay, explain why do you exist? Be transparent. Don't explain us. It's protecting us. It's not. It's simply not anymore working. And we have to face it. But it's not, I don't believe that somebody will just come say, oh yes, Luda, you are so right. We will give it to you. No. That's why I say it's so important that everybody who listening to this podcast start to discussion, start to spread this news, start to request your representative, congressperson, governor, media representative, your podcaster. Okay, what we can do action to protect our national security because the old form doesn't work. We have to protect. So what we are doing for this, what you have done, I gave you my voice. You represent me, even if I didn't vote you. Right? You actually decide on my behalf what you have done. And once we have this kind of question, this discussion will be back to Congress. And when, for example, groups like us, we come into Congress or Senate or White House, we come and say, look, guys, we documented this in this example. We have brave people who actually say that American investors in third country like Kazakhstan were all completely taking over their business just because they refused to pay briberies, or philanthropists from U.S. just because he was donating some small amount of money to support families of political prisoners, all his family members under threats of transnational financial repression. Those regimes want to close their bank accounts in the U.S., not in Kazakhstan, in the U.S. What do you have done about it? What do you have done about it? And until we have these kind of questions, we will have no answers. And no remedies. And again, to create, to develop, to live life, we need to have secure environment. Secure environment, we want it or we don't want, it's Western jurisdictions.
That's the crazy thing to me is that your bank account could be shut down in the U.S. because of something, because of something completely...
Data. Communication data from U.S. can be shared like this with no remedies.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think you're doing God's work. If I can send you some sats, I need you to give a link at the end of the show because I will do that. So, but here's the deal for me though. I'm a cynical guy when it comes to politicians. And while I would like to think that I vote and have representative democracy, which to a large extent, I think many people are beginning to realize it has its flaws, it feels like an uphill battle to go to a representative and say, hey, your constituents are being impacted by this. Like, you know, here's a story. And for them to, maybe one thing to sort of passively vote in favor of protecting someone's rights, but to like proactively take action and say this isn't permissible feels like a long shot to me. Do you find, like, I think I saw some, you've spoken in front of Congress, like done testimony here in the U.S. Do you find them to be rather receptive to your concerns, or does it fall on deaf ears? Like, what's the general reaction?
General reaction, it's shock, because most of them voted for these laws to protect their citizens and to protect their families. And my story, when a group of dozens of secret services of Kazakhstan weaponized cybersecurity law to get my travel data, it means like hotel information, airport information, any kind of my IP addresses, communication data, the way how I actually lead my team while I'm traveling between EU and US, my financial data, everybody which I interacted financially or where I paid, and they wanted to get it from US and from Belgium. And Belgium, the only reason, like, I have special protection in Belgium, so this is the reason why Belgium didn't request automatically from the US. Normally, it would be transferred immediately. But just because I have this protection in Belgium, they already, like, long hard after previous attacks that my data shouldn't be sent automatically to everywhere. They prevented it. And they were shocked. I haven't seen, maybe Senator Warren only office wasn't shocked at all. But others, everybody was shocked. And they, I think, at least this is my belief, my impression, they want actually to improve it. The only thing that there is ongoing different kind of agendas, priorities in society. What does society expect? And that's why I'm saying that education about these expectations from society will be shaped if we actually articulate this problem as much as possible. Once every in the US understand that his travel data, communication data, financial data compromised, and it's easily compromised by everybody in the name of protection of national security, which is in fact undermining national security, because even if one US citizen with this kind of law can be travel data, communication data, and financial data weaponized, it means that it can be multiplied for everybody. And this is why it's so dangerous. So once we have this kind of demand from society, these things will go very smooth. Look what's happening with debunking practices. Until Bitcoiners brought this issue to Senate, nobody was discussing it. But once there is demand to discuss the issue of debunking, you have things happening, right? You have a special bill, you have immediate reaction. So it will be the same. This is why campaign and education is so matters. We don't ask you to go and say, please do this amendment. No, we don't need it. Just ask questions. What's happening with my privacy? I want this issue to be discussed. I want to have protection of my travel data, communication data, privacy data, my everything. Because we live in a digital world. More and more, all of our data with AI, with everything, is digital. So it's so important right now. We really have cybersecurity protection, but not theoretical trust-built protection, which allows every single malicious actors, former secret services, any kind of official, former or current, to weaponize data of any kind of entity or person in the world, right? It's so dangerous. And we need to fix it first in US. Once we fix it in US, you will be surprised how huge effect you would have on other jurisdictions, because everything established there, and then it's spread all over the world. So if we made US safe in this regard, and we protect travel communication data, so it will be standard here, you will follow. US will transfer this to other countries like Latin American countries, African countries, Asian countries, and many, many others. So this is the key point, what we have to do right now.
So to me, that is a huge wake-up call, because when we met in Prague, and what I spoke there, and what I was speaking about was basically, you know, being the change you want to see. And so when it comes to Bitcoin, opting best you can for a Bitcoin standard, opting out of fiat nonsense, you know, kind of probably the obvious, you know, take self-custody, run a node, all these things. This is one of those areas that I feel like, sort of like Bitcoin, we need some sufficiently large minority of people to get it and to want to do something about it, that if you can reach that critical mass, that's when you begin getting the attention of people.
Exactly.
Because you just can't shut us up anymore, right? So to me, especially someone with, I mean, I'm not the most technical person. My background sort of leans towards cybersecurity. And so I'm aware of like the, you know, I'm aware that nothing we do is totally private. Exactly. Until I started preparing for this podcast, I was completely unaware just how transient that information was, flowing across borders for the sake of AML compliance, or, you know, it's not just AML, but is your hope basically? So it needs to start with the U.S. I understand.
Absolutely.
We tend to be a precursor to much of what happens in the world. We just need to get enough people in the U.S. in particular aware of what's going on and passionate about it to contribute to projects like yours and voice their opinion.
That's absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. This is number one. I think you will not find anybody who will absolutely reckless and say, I don't care what's happened with my travel data. I don't care what's happened with my communication data. I don't care what's actually my iCloud data was sent us, where and how it's used, right? Because this is what you enjoy. You enjoy your privacy. And when your basic privacy is undermined, like, what actually protects you? Where is this protection?
Do you think, though, I agree with you that I think there is a cohort of people who would very much align with that, someone like myself as well. It seems to me like we've been told that our privacy is being eroded, you know, for a long time. And people are like, oh, well, I like social media too much, so I'm going to keep on, you know, I don't care if the Chinese government's spying on me. I'm going to, you know, go on TikTok or whatever. Like, there's a sense of...
Yeah, but this is things which you're ready to share. Not everything in your phone you're ready to share, right? Why you have a pin to your phone? Why you have pin to your credit card? Why you just like have your some kind of privacy? Why you close windows or something, like why you have doors, right? You still want to have some certain amount of privacy. And what we try to say is, if you want to feel safe, if you want to have some kind of rules which provides you safety at some point of your life, you don't have them. And if you don't protect them now, you will not have them anymore at all.
No, so I hear you. I think for people, for, you know, closing your windows and doors, there's something very physical and apparent when you do that. I think as long as people aren't paying the price for their information, you know, in some sort of immediate sense, in some sort of painful way, it's easy to be sort of apathetic and, oh, well, yeah, I hope they don't.
Pay. Compliance, it's a huge cost. This is what actually undermines your business competitiveness. This is what I'm trying to say. I think this is important. Michael, you said something extremely important. Majority of people, they don't understand how their competitiveness, in general, Western civilization competitiveness undermined, because you have to pay insane amount of compliance costs. Insane. While all of these authoritarian regimes company, they not. They don't, because they have agreement. They products are cheaper. They can steal your innovation. Nobody will hold them accountable. Why?
Yeah. I think
you pay
maybe
which price?
Yeah, I think maybe that's the point I'm making, is that people don't realize that until their bank account is shut off, they don't think that they're paying a price.
Of course.
You're completely correct. So I used to do enterprise software sales, and we sold privacy solutions for like compliance with GDPR. You know, California's law that they rolled out a few years ago. And if people understand the enormous cost burden of these even just those regulations, never mind, you know, AML and like, you know, KYC.
Yes.
People think that it's just like this thing that businesses just go in and check the box. It's like, no, you might hire a team of attorneys or compliance professionals or what have you. In that trickle down, like the tangible cost to you as a consumer of whatever product is real. I think it's just, we're so accustomed to that. We don't realize that that's where pay, unless you've worked in corporate America where you see all the waste from, you know, compliance requirements, you don't recognize that. It's sort of like inflation. It's insidious. You kind of feel like something's off, but you don't really know how to put your finger on it or whatever. So part of the wake-up call isn't just you could have your bank account shut down. It's that you're already on a daily basis paying the price
exactly.
for a bunch of nonsense that not only isn't helping you because money laundering exactly. happens, but is also potentially putting your data in the hands of exactly. effectively criminals halfway across the world
exactly.
if they want to abuse that.
Exactly. A lot of people like to travel to Thailand or any kind of Asian or Latin American countries. And imagine your travel data. Every of criminals will know where you arrive, where you stay, and how much money you brought with you. How easy for them to select who has to be their target, who has to be next kidnapped. It's not theoretical. It's vacation. It's your work. It's any kind of your movement. It's your roadmap.
So are the perpetrators? I'd be curious to hear. You mentioned a few examples there. Are those countries that tend to be worse? Like, you know, are
there
more,
is graduation? There is like those who use it constantly, like Kazakhstan, like Turkey, Nicaragua, right? China, right? They are very sophisticated in this. Why? Because they enjoyed quite for a while sharing of intelligence information. So US, European country, UK, they share it and they actually provide knowledge, intelligence knowledge for special services of Kazakhstan or Nicaragua in the past, China in the past, right? And many others, Turkey until nowadays as a NATO ally, right? So those countries, they are one of the most sophisticated in abusing. And they're not like keep it only for themselves. No, they, as I told you on my example, they love to cooperate with other regimes. They love to cooperate because they see the value when Western civilizations are falling because it's something which gives them like lack of accountability.
Mm-hmm. So if you are like a wealthy Westerner traveling to any one of those countries, would you say it is a much higher probability that you're the target of like a hostage?
Of course. Of course.
Yeah.
This is number one threat.
Yeah. Someone there knows. The odds of someone not knowing are pretty low in certain countries.
Is why these databases stolen, for example, from exchanges, from financial institutions, are so much wanted for any kind of criminal groups, right? Because then they know, okay, these people, we put them on their line, with different kind of right now new technology solutions, with access to, again, stolen data from air companies, hotels, request of this information. It's just enough to corrupt some policemen in some third country and cooperate criminal group with policemen and prosecutors, and they will have through database of Interpol whenever you travel. They just put you on a watch list and that's it. And you will never know. This is a problem. You will never know. It's not I'm trying to make somebody paranoid. I'm just saying that these remedies are really crucial, that nobody should be able to get your data without decision of the court. It's not okay to delegate all of this information to be so easily accessed because of private institutions like banks, travel agencies and stuff. They have to share it and collect it endlessly. It's dangerous. It's literally dangerous.
Yeah. So we were talking offline, could you share what it was you were speaking about in Prague when we were there? I think this is interesting. I want to draw maybe sort of this distinction between maybe some progress being made or maybe why things aren't as bad in the US as perhaps Europe. What's the message you were trying to convey there?
So just to be precise, I don't think like even when Congress and Congress chairman were asking me if I feel safe in US or other countries. I don't feel safe anywhere because I understand how, unfortunately, because of this existing AML and cybersecurity rules built on trust, all our Western civilizations is easily can be weaponized with this no data protection. This is number one. Second, when we speak about US, you guys here achieved at least some kind of certain advance in protection of ability to produce and to enjoy privacy payment instruments, privacy communication instruments. In Europe, what we see, degradation of these kind of tools. Again, with the good intentions, like governments want to protect citizens against child abuse or against threats of terrorism, extremism, trafficking of people. What we see in the end all of this data easily can be weaponized. And this is something what we try to change, educate, and regulators. The difference, again, between US and European Union, that in US you have quite active community, those who defend this, people ready to donate, people ready to invest their time and expertise and actually inventing something which is helping societies to protect privacy and talk about it. Talk about it not only between, like we're talking right now here with you on podcast, but go also to neighbors, go into a constituency representatives, senator representative or government representative and many, many others. So this is proactive position. This is what saves US from being completely right now under question what will be next. So overall, I'm alarming about these threats. I'm sure that once we actually get to the point that people understand that this problem exists, there will be certain amount of people who will be A, supporting, investing, and sharing expertise how we're going to fix it. So solution-based approach. I don't see this problem be solved in European Union. Because if you compare even Bitcoin community, when you talk to Bitcoiners in Europe and you ask them, guys, we need something to, oh, yes, yes, we support you so much. You are so great. It's just unbelievably good. Continue work. It's, but I cannot continue my work just by myself, even with my small team. We need your support. We need your expertise. We need your investment, your time. We need, if you don't get this expertise, find us somebody or help us, donate us, or like help us to spread information. Do something. Be active. You have a voice. You can talk to your representative. You can talk to your journalists and so on. So, and then, no, I would just migrate. You know, there are all plenty other jurisdictions. Why I should spend my life? And then I said, like, okay, you guys don't want to spend your life for fighting and to protecting your basically neighborhood, the place you was growing. You feel okay? Why then should I do it, right? Like, if you feel okay, I will focus then on other jurisdictions where people are fighting for it. Fix it at least there, and then we'll hope that because this example is established, we will move it to other countries like it happened before. So this is my huge disappointment, right? And I don't want to feel everybody listening is frustrated. I think it's honest discussion, open dialogue discussion is, it's actually very healthy. I have to say that while we were speaking in Prague, in BTC Prague conference with Trezor and other guys, who first went in different solution like Bitcoin ATMs. And I said, like, look, guys, with existing regulation in EU, I would not be able to use Bitcoin ATM as I used to do it in 2018, which actually saved my life. In the reality of today, I don't know how I would be able to use Bitcoin to overcome those transnational financial repression I faced back in 2018. And I really sad about it because it means huge deterioration of freedoms in also in EU because of this crazy overregulation of privacy payment tools, privacy communication tools. We have to deal with it.
What's changed in the last 7 years specifically?
So before there was no regulation, like, right, it was just no regulation. That's why it was plenty of different kind of, from one side risk, from other side opportunities. Now, if you use ATM, AML regulation in Europe assume ATM as a potentially tools, almost, if you read regulation, it's almost recognizing ATMs as a machine for money laundering. The same with privacy payment instruments, mixers, or any kind of privacy payment instruments as a tool for money laundering because they cannot disclose all transactions. If you use self-hosted wallets, you're obliged to confirm that it's your wallet. It means that exchanges keep data of every single wallet. If there is a leak of data, like it was recently on Coinbase or other of all these self-hosted wallets, it means that all criminals would have a roadmap where they should go, where knock the door, and whom to kidnap.
Man,
this is what we have right now. This is why if you look into the news in France is number one where you should feel unsafe. But this is, again, because people vocal about it, right? How many kidnappings and different kind of threats happening and we just not aware about it, right?
Yeah. And so your contention is that a lot of those kidnappings, because we have a guy who used to work on our team who was hacked, had his Bitcoin stolen, before he started working with the Bitcoin Way. And he was convinced that it was the Mt. Gox data breach, because he said, I don't know how else they would have even known to target me.
Exactly.
And so that, like, a data breach is one thing. They get, they get the map to, you know, who are the people and where might they be or what have you. And maybe they show up at your house with a wrench. But what we're talking about here for most of this conversation is even well beyond that, because it's not just your financial data and your street address. I mean, it could be literally anything and everything about you. And so depending on how they want to attack you, they have a lot of different options. I think something that would be helpful is we're starting to kind of get close to time here. So what are there, like, practical tools, solutions that you use in your life? Because obviously, to your point earlier, you got to take off your mask and give them your passport if you want to travel, and you're giving up your identity in that way. Are there ways, though, that you sort of try to operate as privately within the system as you possibly can? I mean, both technical or just other sort of tactics that you use?
I mean, for obvious reason, I cannot share a lot, but I would just say...
If you could broadly maybe give
very
some
broadly,
general guidance.
I don't think you guys want to live life I do.
So
it would be very boring for many people.
So, suffice it to say, you have tactics, there are ways, but you need to be cautious to allow those to work. Yeah.
It's not because I'm now facing something, but just because I'm so much aware about it.
Yeah.
And also, to be precise, a lot of people who used to prosecute me, they already hold accountable, so they cannot do it anymore. And this is kind of small satisfaction I have. Small because still I understand how easy to weaponize by anybody who just may like and not like what I'm doing and go after me or, like, you know, people around or something. So I'm just aware about how this system extremely, unfortunately, broken and easy to undermine. And I try to raise the awareness so more and more people understand that they have to deal with it. They have to protect themselves. We have to protect. It's impossible for me alone to solve it. I cannot fix problems of everybody. Majority of people has to understand that there is this problem, we have to address it, and we can. This is the most important. When I was speaking with people in White House or State Department or Senate, they said, the best thing that we can fix it, we just need to understand how. So we need to bring them to this solution. More bright mind we have here, how to solve it in this discussion, because it's going to be just me as a victim of this kind of, victim who overcame this kind of prosecution, right? But we need to have also people on our side as an expert who will speak about it and say, yeah, we have to have this solution. This trust-based approach has to be absolutely removed, right?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Okay, so I'm going to I'm going to ask you the last question I ask everyone. I think you've got your thought for this one, but I just want to say, for anyone listening, I would truly add this to the list of the things that I would recommend. Like, again, my speech in Prague was all about highlighting what are the ways that we can just opt out and remove ourselves from the existing system or fight the systems that are currently in place. I would add everything that you're working on to that list. It's just sort of a world that, you know, I'm less familiar with. So I'm going to study up on this. I'm going to start retweeting your stuff, following you. I'd encourage everyone else to do so. My last question for you, what is an unpopular opinion that you have, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it?
My offense will come with huge love, because you need to remember, Bitcoiners saved me, right? And I will forever grateful for it. And this is why I'm a Bitcoin advocate. But I really believe that this approach of a European Bitcoiner, that I will move from this jurisdiction, I'm not ready to fight. It's so humiliating, so humiliating. They should actually be able, the same like, US Bitcoiners, protect themselves, protect industry, customers. This is something has to be done. It's homework. It's just like, how come? Like, you go out without brushing your tooth, like without having an order in your house, right? So it's the same for me. This, we need to protect ourselves. We need to actually have community ready to act, not just move on.
I think that is very good. And I've talked to enough people, at least, for example, in the UK, who would be offended by that opinion. So I think that's a very good one. Luda, this has been a lot of fun. Very interesting, very heavy. This is, this is a lot, I think, probably for many people to absorb. And I can only imagine how much more you know that we didn't even get to. Why don't you tell people where they can find you, learn more about you, donate, contribute in any way possible?
Yes. Yeah, so our website, Open Dialogue Foundation, odfoundation.eu. I will be happy to share it with you, but you also can reach out to me on Noster or on X. Also Instagram. I'm quite popular in different social media, so I'm happy to chat with everybody. And I also will be very grateful for your feedback, where I'm too complicated, how I can simplify my message, make it more vocal, and how you can contribute and support us. We really need to have expertise, financial support, and as much as possible repost, so this information actually growing in understanding, like the people understand our message, because I think it's crucial. It's number one thing what can change this reality where we are right now.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And for everyone listening, again, this is your call to action. If you really care about self-sovereignty and freedom, this is one of those areas that we can all turn some amount of our attention, our capital to. I would really encourage you to do it. I will be doing that. I can certainly assure you. So Luda, thank you so much
for your time.
Thank
you so Great chatting. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Bye.
And that's a wrap again. Hope you found this conversation enlightening. I know I sure did. As I said, I am truly going to do what I can to contribute and invest some of my capital and time in helping Luda on her in her mission. This is a very important subject. So go check her out on Twitter. Go follow them. Go check out their website as well. I'll link to that in the show notes. And of course, if you need help with taking your Bitcoin into 100% self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you do it the right way the first time. We also help with protecting your online privacy, setting up privacy phones, giving you Plan B residency options. Basically, all of the concerns that Luda and I talked about, we can help you mitigate against some of those areas to a large degree. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. And of course, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at @thebitcoinway_. I'm there as well, @theothermjordan. Would appreciate you reaching out, saying hi, giving recommendations for podcast guests and so forth. As always, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.